And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
And I'm Nick Fillingham.
Yeah, you said your name for
I did my name.
Wow, good job.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah. So, how you been?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Things are busy around here.
It's a very busy week. It's the pre-build week.
This is the pre-build week. Yeah.
Which is a very busy time. As we've just said.
Yeah,
should we jump straight in?
We have nothing. We've got no news because it's all happening next week.
Well,
so it's a short episode. No, actually, we do have some cool stuff going on. So last week we talked about the Silverlight 5 release candidate.
We did.
That was posted. And, you know, we started going into some of the features, and we linked to a PDF that has a bunch of stuff. And so Pete Brown actually went through, and he listed not only kind of the big features that everybody knows about, but also what's new, what's changed, what's different about the RC from the last beta that was available. So really good post, nice way to come up to speed if you're a Silverlight developer.
Because we try to do that. We try to talk about what the top new features. We got some of them. We talked about like low
trick
latency
play.
Sound, trick play.
Yep. And the rest.
But we also incorrectly attributed the post to Pete, and actually I think it was someone from his team
that wrote
it.
That was a different post.
That was a different post?
Yeah.
We made a few errors last week.
WPF, yeah, you did make a few errors.
I did. I made the errors last week.
WPF being maps control, it was actually a different gentleman that we linked to, and now you're going to quiz me on his name, and I'm not going to have it.
And you should be pronouncing it correctly, too, just by the way.
I should.
There'll be a test at the end.
Well, I like guys like Pete Brown. Easy to pronounce.
Pete Brown.
Yeah.
Excellent. All right.
He's going to be like, it's actually Brown.
Yes, it's Dutch.
Yeah, that's right.
There's an umlaut on the W.
And speaking about Silverlight 5, Mike Talty wrote a bunch of in-depth articles that talk about specifically how do you use a bunch of that features? How do you take advantage of trick play? How do you take advantage of things like the low latency sound that we talked about? So really, really cool. I love Mike Talty's posts. He really makes them easy to digest.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Moving right along.
You think it's Talty? You're making me really
I think it's Talty. I think it is. Yeah.
Okay. And
I think,
Mick.
Yeah, you got this one.
The Mick?
My hike.
Yeah.
It's a long I.
That's right.
Okay. Calculating when the 1,000th XKCD post will appear.
Yes.
Using F#, your favorite language.
I love this because this is just about as geeky as they come.
Mm.
I mean, you can't imagine.
This is over-engineering quite a bit, isn't it? Because you could really just look at the date and look at when they started and just go, yeah, we'll see it in like 5 days. Or
But they don't publish
days.
On every single day.
It's true.
So clearly you need an F# algorithm.
You're looking for a patent.
Yes, exactly. So I thought this is really cool.
This comes back. I asked you on, I think, the first guest episode that I hosted. I said, what is F#?
F# is specifically built to solve this problem.
But I want to ask again. I want to ask a different question. Why would you use F# and not C#? Like, surely you could write an algorithm in C# that would do this.
You could.
Why would you use F# for this program? For this problem, excuse me.
You know, I'm going to be hard-pressed.
Apart from the fact that you love F#.
It's probably, I would guess, actually, it's probably the same number of lines of code, just looking at this here. It's probably the same number of lines of code to do this in C#. So I think it's just because F# is, you know, it's like the math and science to the extreme. So.
All right, I'll give you that one.
Yeah.
I was a bit weak in an answer, but I'll give it to you.
I'm really stressed. It's the week before build.
That's true. But you also love F#.
Of course.
So that you don't really need an excuse.
Right.
So what was the answer? What did you read through the post? So when do we think we're going to see it?
Well, the answer yesterday maybe isn't the same as the answer today. I think you're going to have to copy this into Visual Studio and run it.
I should do it on my phone app that I'm building.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
How's that coming along
it's
for you?
It's doing really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, moving right along.
Okay.
The Channel 9 highlight of the week, or one of them, is the Windows Phone Mango Jumpstart Workshops now on video, or now on Channel 9, or now in video, I should say. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so this has been getting some rave reviews. I think that INSAT, most people probably don't know what INSAT
ratings
are.
What does INSAT mean?
INSAT, it's
what does it stand for?
It's like the net satisfaction
rating
of customers or people that attend an event.
Sure.
And it's just through the roof. I mean, it's one of the highest INSATs I've ever seen at 187, I think.
Sure.
And so in any event, you don't need to worry about that. The idea is that if you want to get started with Mango, this is the place to start if you want to go through and kind of learn really not only entertaining but informative ways of taking advantage of everything that Mango has to offer.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is a tutorial series about 14 videos, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
It looks like it.
Yep.
And these are on Channel 9 right now.
That's correct.
Right this very second.
Right now.
And speaking of Windows Phone, the Windows Phone Starter Kit for Schools.
Yes, so Chris Koenig put this out there. And you know, I sent him some feedback because it's a little bit difficult to understand exactly what this is. So hopefully he'll get this page updated. But it's actually very cool. What he has is basically it's a template so that if you're a school, like a high school or a university.
And any kind of educational institution.
Yeah, and if you want to publish like your own Windows Phone 7 application.
Except for Dan Fernandez, a school of slam dancing. That's not probably appropriate.
Probably not what they had in mind here.
Yeah.
But
or crunking. What does he do? Is he a crunker?
I don't know what the difference is. That sounds dirty.
Oh, it does. I didn't mean it to be dirty, actually.
Yeah.
I just meant something that Miamiites, how do they dance?
Oh, yeah, crunking sounds.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, sure.
Anyway,
yeah.
Moving right along.
But anyway, if you wanted to, if you're a school, if you know someone who is affiliated with a school, if you want to publish a quick Windows Phone 7 application that shows off the school colors and contact information and maybe who do you get in touch with, maybe if my kid was going to school, I'd like to have the principal on speed dial, that sort of thing, then this is a cool way to publish a quick phone application based
cool.
on that school.
Awesome. Zapfest 2011 Hawaii style.
Yeah, so first of all, do you know what a Zapfest is?
Zap is the little acronym that we use for executables on Windows Phone, is that right?
Yeah,
something to do with Silverlight as well?
Yeah.
What does it stand for? I don't know what it stands for.
I have no idea what it
something
stands
like XAML
for.
Something like XAML program or something? Would it be something like that?
Well, not every phone is XAML, so I don't know if it's actually if
okay.
it stands for. Don't ask me what
someone will know.
For. Someone
should
will
tell
know.
Us. Who do you think will answer first? Do you think C. Kurt will respond first?
Probably. That's a challenge.
All right. Whoever, tell us what ZAP stands for, because he should know, and I really shouldn't, so
yeah,
I get a free pass.
We'll wait.
Zapfest 2011 Hawaii style. So did we send people to Hawaii?
No, so what's going on here is Hawaii is a set of libraries. We were just talking to Larry Lieberman actually out in the hallway, and he was telling us all about it. Hawaii is a set of libraries which makes it a lot easier for you to, let's say, do fancy stuff within Windows Phone 7 Mango.
Okay.
So it's not included in the box with Mango, but it's a set of libraries you can download and then start doing some interesting things with.
Right.
And so this Zapfest was basically a competition. So we talked about Zaps. Zapfests are where a bunch of people get together and build Windows Phone 7 applications.
Yep. Like the Kinect kind of hackathon that we had for the SDK launch.
Yeah, same kind of style.
Got it, same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is a roll-up of a list of some of the really cool videos or really cool applications that people built using the Hawaii bits. Unfortunately, it's kind of an interesting thing going on. The team that won didn't actually use the Hawaii components, but they built a really cool phone application nonetheless.
Okay.
And you took a look at some of these, right?
I did, yeah. There's I think the one that won was an app about taking a self-portrait with your Windows Phone camera, and there was some voice activation controls. I think it would say, like, turn left, 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 right, 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 and it would track where your face was in the frame to help you kind of get it in the middle or at least get a good self-portrait.
Oh,
so that was
cool.
Kind of cool.
Yeah.
There was a cookbook or an app that would recite recipe instructions to you with voice commands. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
So it's, you know, you're in the kitchen and you're I do this all the time, actually.
Yeah.
I look up a recipe and then I start cooking and then I realize I have crap all over my hands.
Yeah.
And what do I do next? So this
right.
is actually kind of that was a really cool app. I like
right.
that.
Right.
But
awesome.
But it's on there. Check out the sizzle reel. You'll see little snippets of all the videos, and I think there's even a longer, more in-depth video as well.
That's awesome. I'm gonna have to check out the recipe one because I'm doing a lot of cooking right now.
Really?
Yeah.
What are you cooking?
Last night we made shrimp. Yeah,
made shrimp.
Well, yeah.
So from just from amino acids and nitrogen, and you just kind of you made shrimp.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
That's pretty
cool. So you can imagine how messy my hands were after creating shrimp.
You had life
out of nothing.
All over your hands. You had the essences of life.
No, it was shrimp and rice noodles.
Or prawns, as we say in
prawns.
Australia.
Yeah, and a bunch of vegetables or veggies, as you say.
Yes,
as Vegemite. Right?
We call them scrumptons.
Scrumptons.
No, we seriously do. All right. The top 10 least known and, or should we say but, most useful features of .NET 4. So who's gone through and found Robert McLean, is that right?
Yeah, Robert McLean. He's actually a friend of mine, very active in the .NET community. He's down in South Africa. And I thought this was really interesting because obviously it's kind of that season of vNext, if you will. So mm-hmm. we're next week at Build, we're talking about Windows 8 vNext. We're talking about... actually, just Windows 8. I guess that's Windows vNext. We're talking about Visual Studio vNext, Team Foundations, a lot of stuff, right? So he queried a bunch of people and kind of asked them which features they're aware of in the .NET framework. So Microsoft.win32.registryview. That's one I know you use all the time, but a lot of people don't.
Tuesdays is my
registry view
day.
Registry View Tuesday.
Yeah.
But anyway, nice little list to go through. And if you get excited about what you see at Build next week and you just want it yesterday, you got to have it, got to use it in your application. Maybe you know, satisfy yourself by going back and taking a look at some of the things that you may not even
know. I've seen
about
a theme over the past few this week on Channel 9 episodes that I've helped host with you, is that there seem to be a lot of posts out there of people that have gone into, or they've gone back and looked at a technology or
back
a framework
basics,
or a library and gone, hey, there's actually some really cool stuff here people don't know about.
Yeah.
So that seems to be, I think maybe we do get a little bit kind of preoccupied with the shiny new objects.
Yeah.
So I think next week we'll probably have another piece of technology that we're looking at. It's like, hey, did you know that you can... blah.
Yeah, I think so. No, I think that's good.
There's a pattern I'm seeing.
It's good.
And I didn't need F-sharp to do that.
Yeah, it's like all those life hacks, like getting new utility. Like,
it really is.
Did you know that your car keys can actually be used to, like,
pick your nose.
Create a martini or whatever.
Yes, yeah. I like yours better.
Hopefully, before you pick your nose.
Moving right along. We are on the Activity Pack CTP equals Workflow Foundation plus Azure. So, tell me about this, Brian Kettle.
Yeah, so first of all, do you know what Windows Workflow Foundation is?
You know, I don't.
Okay, we have
I'd like to
maybe remind people that are just tuning in to the first Nick and Brian episode that actually a developer.
He's my dunce hat.
Right, so we're kind of taking time to go back to the basics
and
kind of remind people. So
I play a doctor on television, that's what I do.
And you stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night, so yeah.
So no idea what you're talking about.
Guess you didn't see that commercial.
No.
So Windows Workflow is a, let's say you have a long-running transaction that needs to take place, such as making sure that, I don't know, payroll is a good one. We need to go back and take a look at how many hours you logged last week. Then we need to go back and make sure that we've got enough.
Only worked three hours last week.
Then we need to go back and look up some other thing. We need to make sure that, you know, is it a Friday? Is it a Saturday? Yes, it's a Saturday, so we need to wait till Monday before we can actually start depositing the funds into your bank. I mean, there's any number of things you can imagine are workflows.
Okay.
Well, how do you make sure that those workflows can stay persistent and can call out into the appropriate tasks when needed and maybe retry if necessary or keep looping until something is taking place? Windows Workflow, that's a really overly simplistic example, but Windows Workflow gives you a set of runtime and framework libraries that make it really easy for you to build those types of applications that may be long running and maybe need to take place even across multiple machines.
How would you know if you need to use Windows Workflow? So how would you know that you need to, that your transaction or your application is running past a certain point of time or the duration gets to a certain length? It's like, okay, now I need to use Windows Workflow Foundation.
Well, I mean, I guess a good example might be. You know, you may need to start it multiple times at all points of the day. Like, let's say that you go to reserve a rental car, right? You're kicking off a transaction that needs to flow through a number of different approval checkpoints, and I may come in 5 minutes later and do the exact same thing.
Okay.
As opposed to the old school, well, let's just batch up all the requests that we need to do and run them overnight on the mainframe.
Okay.
Right? So with Windows Workflows, you can constantly have multiple activities that are happening at various different points in time that you need to do different things based on the state of those activities. And maybe if you're reserving a convertible, we need to do an extra set of activities, so we need to branch that and maybe check your driving history to make sure you're not just going to go wreck our convertible, that kind of thing. So in any event, Windows Workflow can be combined with Windows Azure as well, so that you're now taking advantage of things that need to happen in the cloud. Maybe I need to go update this database record. Maybe I need to go, you know, read a record that's in some blob storage somewhere. Maybe I need to go kick off another process to happen. And so what this story is basically a set of, it's called an activity pack. This is a set of activities that you can use within your Windows Workflow applications to interact with Windows Azure. So I've got a couple of examples here. Working with blob storage, so getting blobs out of the cloud, putting blobs out to the cloud, that kind of thing. Working with storage service tables, updating entities, that sort of thing. A lot of SQL Azure stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's a good thing to check out. And this is a CTP, so I know they'll be building on that over time.
All right. Great.
Yeah.
Next slide is synchronize and auto update your visual extension, your Visual Studio extensions with Extension Sync 0.2.0.
First of all, I just love when people are like extremely modest with their versioning. Like,
yes,
he's not like this is 1.2. This is 0.2.
It's like I think Handbrake, like the video encoding, you know, open source little app.
Yeah,
I think it's been around for like 8 years, and I don't even think it's a version one. I think it's like 0.8.5 or something like that.
Yeah, I love that. You know,
that's very cool. Very understated.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like we're almost there. We're almost at version one.
Exactly.
Actually, I think VLC was it 0.0 something for
VLC?
The video LAN.
Right.
VLC player?
Yeah.
I don't know, video LAN control. I don't know what it stands for. A video player. Now, I asked you about this before we started rolling, because this, to me, sounds like what NuGet is. So how does this relate to NuGet?
That's very astute of you. Yeah. Walk like an Egyptian.
Vogue. That's a Madonna thing. I don't know if you heard of her. She's in it. Very big in Australia. Anyway, keep going.
Anyway. So let's say that you have, I imagine you probably have Visual Studio on multiple machines, one at home, one in the office, one in the car.
27 machines.
Right, exactly. Yes. And don't you hate having to keep up to date on all those machines, all the different extensions?
I hate it. So it is the bane of my existence.
I need to make sure I've got CodeMate over here.
CodeMate, love my CodeMate.
There's a new update that just came out on
GLaDOS,
Wednesday.
GLaDOS, as I call it.
Yes. You need to make sure that GLaDOS is available everywhere you go.
Yes.
This can help you do this. So now you can monitor it from one single machine, and you can say, update it across all your Visual Studio instances, and then it will just synchronize, and I don't actually know how it works.
And who built
all
this?
The sources
did we build this? Is it Microsoft?
Oh, you are just asking me because his name is pronounced.
This is a community thing. This is somebody on the community.
Latish Segal.
I think that's perfect.
Yeah,
I think
sounds good.
Right, and Latish will email
Brian
Keller at Microsoft.com.
But this is outstanding. I love this, and it's all open source.
Okay.
And it just, I think it really highlights the extensibility engine within Visual Studio 2010. A lot of stuff that you can really hook into and take advantage of.
Right, and it's only 0.2.0. So imagine when they'll be at 0.3.0.
Oh, man, blows my mind.
That's crazy.
It blows my mind.
Moving right along, how many ways can you slice a URL and name the pieces? Now, I kind of didn't understand. Well, yeah, I kind of looked at the title and I was kind of very, how do you slice a URL? But it's really interesting. So the author of this post, which is Tontek Celik,
yeah,
went through and looked at all the various URL standards over the past maybe 25 years or at least 15 years.
Right.
And just looked at all the various standards proposed and how they defined all the individual components, like the semicolon and the .com bit and the slash and the ports.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is fascinating.
Yeah, and if you look at this, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 different conventions over the year.
Yeah.
That actually reminds me of that XKCD cartoon that came out, I think it was a few weeks ago, where they say, gosh, there's 12 competing standards. We need to find some way to rationalize this.
Let's create a 13th.
Yeah, exactly.
That now brings them all
13
together.
Competing standards. Yes, exactly. but no, it's really fascinating to take a look at that, and it's just a cluster. I mean, gosh.
Yeah.
I don't know what else to say.
It's amazing. And I wonder, which of these standards are kind of, well, which of these are still implemented in some capacity?
Sure.
Or who uses these still?
And if you're like a browser, if you're writing a browser, or even if you're writing like the start run dialog, you've got to understand how to parse up all these different.
I would never have even thought that there would be such detail in just the URL.
Oh, yeah. Go read the RFC archives
it's
one of these days.
I will do that.
Yeah, it's crazy. In fact, RFC 1129, I believe, is dealing with how to send internet packets using avion carriers.
As in birds?
As in, you're very quick.
As in?
Carrier pigeons.
Pigeons.
They came out like April 1st, 2001 or something like that. Yeah.
Is that real?
Yeah. Yeah, it's 1996. It talks about how they're like high latency.
How do you tie USB keys to like their foot?
It's an April 1st article.
It's
actually an RFC.
And there's avion characters. There's or avion as probably the more
avian,
correct pronunciation.
Yeah. There's another one that actually deals with the proposal that says that if you're somebody who writes a virus or another sort of malicious packet, they recommend that you actually append an evil bit to the end so that people will know, okay, this
I've
is
I've always
evil.
Said there should be a virus port.
Yeah.
So that we should open, like, 666 should be the virus port. And all viruses should be, like, sending and transmitting traffic over 666.
That's great. Port 666. Yeah, just give them, kind of like the skateboard parks, how cities have, like, said, all right, we can't get rid of skateboarders, but you can go here and we'll build a nice little park for
And then when you go to your friend's house, I'm coming back to my funny joke, you just go onto their firewall and you just open up port 666.
Right, exactly.
And then they're screwed.
Yep, exactly.
And then, skateboarding park. That was, okay, whatever.
You should write an IFC. Mine was funnier.
I should.
Yeah.
Come back, Dan. episode 58, Channel 9 Highlight, Cloud Cover, episode 58, Exploring the Windows Azure Toolkit for Android. Now, deja vu, did we talk about this last week?
We did talk about this
last
week.
But we got something wrong. Or we omitted something.
We got it completely right.
Well, why are we?
What we're talking about is the fact that there's now a Cloud Cover episode.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah. So Steve and Wade have now gone, there's now video. There's now hilarious video.
It is pretty. Have you watched Cloud Cover yet?
I've been in the room when these guys film, and I really wish we could publish some of the before and after cameras rolling.
It's great.
The amount of full frontal nudity is just mind blowing. It really is.
They're actually not wearing any pants underneath the table. It's it's a family show, guys.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah. No. Cool. All right.
Yeah.
And we should be seeing these guys at maybe at Build.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, who knows?
Maybe. I mean, speculating here.
It's all speculation.
Yeah.
Another Channel 9 highlight is TechEd Australia 2011 in the Channel 9 events area. And Greg Duncan, who's helping us with the show, he highlighted that I think he perhaps thought that some of the Channel 9 community may not have been aware just how much content is on the Channel 9 WAC events page.
Oh, yeah.
There are events going all around the world all the time from, you know, various Microsoft subsidiaries around the globe. And Australia is just finished, or is just having its TechEd content published up now, and I think New Zealand's about to happen, or no, New Zealand was 2 weeks ago. But I think the point was there's a lot of events content happening on Channel 9 WAC events.
Well, is it happening now? Because I think it's winter there.
No, it has.
Right? So you'll actually see it in like 6 months or so.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We have to wait for all the submarine internet cables to thaw out in the summer so we can get our bits through, get our packets through.
Nice.
Yeah, it actually just finished August 30th, September 2nd, so it was actually a week ago. But
yeah.
I know they're uploading all those videos now, so that should all be there very, very soon. I haven't had a chance to actually watch any, but I should.
That's the thing, right? Like, I give a lot of presentations around the world, and I always get worried that people have already watched my presentations because there's probably like 10 versions of me doing
and
the
you've
same
been giving
talk
the same talk for the
like
last 8 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it really has.
Yeah, no, yeah. It is.
It's getting kind of old for me.
Yeah, you know what you need to do? You really need to upgrade your slide deck into widescreen because the whole 4.3 thing.
No, it's a fad.
No,
it's a fad.
It's not a fad.
I don't even use a projector. I just do printouts, and occasionally I'll do like an overhead projector and also slide.
with a felt tip pen
that
you kind of write on the top and go, and you rub it up.
It works for me.
Okay, so yeah, hot tip. Check out Channel 9 events area. There's a lot of cool stuff happening there.
Picks of the week! Yeah, so this is really exciting for me. You know, it's maybe a lot of people don't realize.
By the way, this is my pick of the week, and I graciously gave it to you because you cried like a little baby.
I have been.
You
doing,
said I love Hyper-V. I want the Hyper-V pick.
I have been doing virtualization for I want to say 6 or 7 years.
Wow.
And yeah, it's something that I use for my job all the time. All my demos. I actually ship virtual machines. I have Visual Studio and sample data and TFS and hands-on labs and all that stuff. I love virtual machines. I don't know what I did before virtual machines, but one of the
jazz
challenges.
Ballet.
Yeah, I did. Jazz hands, exactly.
Well, jazz ballet, actually, which is kind of more an interpretive dance version.
I know. Gosh.
Sorry to patronize you.
Yeah. That means to talk down to.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Okay.
So, in any event, one of the challenges is that virtual PC that runs on Windows clients, like Windows 7, for example, it's only 32-bit.
Okay.
It doesn't support snapshotting, so you can do an undo disk, but that's just one point in time as opposed to multiple points in time. Whereas Hyper-V has all these fancy features, but it's Windows Server only. So now what they're doing is they're taking Hyper-V, bringing that into Windows 8, and then making that something that you can take advantage of within Windows 8. They're also adding some additional capabilities, which they talk about on the Building Windows 8 blog, such as the ability for you to work with Wi-Fi adapters within Hyper-V. Mm-hmm. Previously, if you wanted to use Wi-Fi on Windows Server, Hyper-V, you had to like bridge your network adapters, and it was not really a great solution. But,
so how do they do that? How do you create like a false MAC address or something? How do they get around that? Like if you're in a virtual machine,
a network address, a MAC address.
Is it so using like the physical MAC address that's the actual hardware you're using?
It uses the physical adapter, but then it looks like a different IP and MAC address.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
because you can actually within the Hyper-V settings, you can go in there and you can say the range of MAC addresses that it's allowed to assign to that particular adapter.
Interesting. All right. And then, obviously, we covered, I think my pick of the week last week was talking about ISO and VHD support. So this kind of ties in nicely.
Yeah, it really does. I'm excited to check out everything that's happening next week at Build, which leads into your...
My pick of the week is talking about Build.
Yeah, so you're going to be at Build.
I'm going to be at Build. I'm jumping on a plane, I think, tomorrow and heading down to Anaheim, California, which is where Disneyland is.
That's right.
Isn't that awesome?
It's the only reason we're going, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm probably going to skip out on the conference.
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is Monday morning I will be, unfortunately, struck down with a very severe, complex illness.
So bad.
That will require me to have time at the happiest place on earth. To recover.
Does Disney? I've never been to Disneyland. Does it have all the same rides as Disney World over in Orlando?
I don't know.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
I only found out like a year ago there was two Disneylands. I mean, I knew there was Euro Disney and there was Disneyland in Hong Kong, but there's Disneyland in Florida as well.
Yeah.
I knew there was like Universal.
Well, it's Disney World in Florida.
Right.
Right.
Which is different.
Right.
Okay.
Anyway.
So we're going to build. Well, so here's the intriguing part. The Channel 19 will be a build.
Okay.
That's all I can tell you.
Okay. That's
as
interesting.
Of this point.
And so the last conference you went to, what was that?
That was Mix 11.
And what did you do there?
We did Channel 9 Live at Mix 11.
That's interesting.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
What an interesting question for you to ask me, and especially in that order.
Yeah, interesting.
But the build keynotes will be streaming live.
Okay.
Buildwindows.com.
Got it.
Streaming live, so make sure you head to buildwindows.com at the respective times on Tuesday, and I think it's Wednesday as well.
Yep.
And then, you know what? The Channel 9 team will be there.
Fantastic.
Don't know what we're going to be doing.
Probably writing It's a Small World.
I think we will. we'll be doing a Barbershop Quartet rendition along the sidewalks in Anaheim, California.
Great.
That's where help me the ska band that Gwen Stefani, no doubt.
Oh yeah.
From Anaheim, California.
Oh, maybe they'll be at Build.
Maybe they will.
Let's hope so.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I'll see you at Build.
I'll see you at Build. And we'll see you next week.
On this one, tonight.